I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Early on Thursday morning, the FBI moved in on a mansion in New Hampshire.
So how does it all look? Is my hair good? It's all
good. Their target was Ghislaine Maxwell, a 58-year-old accused of procuring girls for her former partner and convicted pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein.
Maxwell played a critical role in helping Epstein to identify, befriend, and groom minor victims for abuse.
Court documents say she did this by first taking the girls to the movies or shopping, before trying to normalize sexual abuse by discussing sexual topics or undressing in front of them. Most of the crimes she's charged with are alleged to have taken place in several of Epstein's luxurious homes between 1994 and 1997.
In 2018, Parallax Views began delving into the sordid saga of billionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein, along with his partner, the British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell, are alleged to have ran a massive global human trafficking sex ring that abused girls as young as 14, and some even say younger. Women like Virginia Giuffre and Maria Farmer have come forward with their own stories of being abused by Epstein, Maxwell, and other players in the upper crust of society. The fact that Epstein counted among his associates such power players as current President Donald Trump, President Bill Clinton, and modeling world moguls like Leslie Wexner of Victoria's Secrets and Jean-Luc Brunel of MC2 Model Management, to name a few, did not elude attention. Then, in 2019, Jeffrey Epstein was arrested, and his sordid saga broke into the mainstream. Shortly thereafter, Epstein died in custody in what was officially ruled a suicide. Although, of course, due to his high society connections, many a conspiracy theory abounds in regards to his demise. Even after his death, however, Epstein's saga continued to draw public attention, including a recent Netflix documentary, Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich. And now, a new development in the shocking story has occurred, namely the arrest of Epstein's right-hand woman, the aforementioned Ghislaine Maxwell. Joining us to revisit the sordid saga of Jeffrey Epstein in light of this latest development is Brace Belden, host of the popular podcast True Anon, which over the past year has examined the sordid saga of Jeffrey Epstein while giving a punk rock style middle finger to his elite associates. In this freewheeling conversation, we cover Epstein, Maxwell, and much, much more, as well as being graced with a special appearance by Parallax View's French correspondent, Marlon Ettinger, who, longtime listeners of the program will recall, attended the New York trial of the late Jeffrey Epstein. So buckle up, folks, because TrueAnon is about to invade Parallax Views.
Yeah.
Welcome to Parallax Views. Brace Belden, the artist formerly known as Piss Pig Granddad, and the co-host with Liz Franzik of TruAnon. You guys are the world's foremost pedophile hunters.
Mm-hmm. Top sicko hunters out there. What's happening? Thank you for having me.
Well, this has been a long time coming.
Absolutely.
I was surprised when a few months ago, I guess, through the TruAnon account, you mentioned me and Ed Opperman in a tweet. And I was like, oh, so Brace knows about us. That's awesome. Oh,
of course. Yeah. I'm a Patreon subscriber.
So I'm just curious, how did you get into the Epstein rabbit hole? I mean, how does someone go from volunteering in the Syrian army, the YPG, to getting into the world of Jeffrey Epstein and uncovering the pedophile conspiracy?
So I remember like reading about it in the mid, like, I don't know, like 2014 or something. Like it had come up again in some way. There was like some article or something about his arrest in 2007, which when that happened, I wasn't really paying attention, but around like 2014 started reading about it. I was like, damn, that's fucked up. That's crazy. And then when 2016 rolled around, and a lot of people don't really mention this anymore, but there was like, it was kind of a big deal that like both Clinton and Trump were running, and both of them had been friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And that's when I was like, that's fucking, I mean, obviously all rich people, there's like not a ton of rich people, right? So they all kind of hang out together. But it was pretty astounding that like both of them are friends with this, you know, seemingly prolific pedophile. And then last summer, in the months leading up to his arrest, sort of coincidentally, I had just been reading about it more. And then when it happened, it's all I read about.
When he got arrested. We're going on a year since he got arrested. Yeah.
It is a year ago today, I believe, Woo-hoo. July 6th. Yeah. I know. Ghislaine got arrested the other day. I was a little surprised they didn't just wait exactly 1 year, but it might have been a little too on the nose for them.
So the TruAnon podcast, that starts what, then August last year?
I think that happened. We started it like a week after he got arrested. Or, you know what? I can't remember at all. We started it like late July, maybe. I think late July. I can't really remember exactly when the first episode was. But it was definitely before he died. And so, yeah. Like a little less than a year ago.
So what do you think the sort of Epstein case says about, you know, the global elite? I mean, all the jokes and memes aside.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on with it?
Well, I think that, like, you know, it's sort of hard to say, and I don't think anyone can, you can have guesses or you can have theories, but it's impossible to sort of say exactly what he was doing. But I think that, like, my view of the situation is that he was running a blackmailing scheme / human trafficking scheme, and with the knowledge and, you know, implicit or explicit blessing of various parties like the U.S. government, governments of other countries. I think it just goes to show that, like, in that world, there's basically nothing that's off limits.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was just going to say, I mean, it's sort of a thread within elite history, not to sound like a conspiracy, you know, nutter that believes in Pizzagate now, but like you read about like Gilles de Rais in France,
exactly,
you know, sacrificing children to Satan and shit. Or you read about the Marquis de Sade.
You know? I was reading, you know, it's funny though. I was actually reading a Gilles de Rais was innocent website the other day. I think literally it's www.gilesderaywasinnocent.com, which was, I didn't get too deep into it, but the lady seems to at least think she's laid out a convincing case. But yeah, no, go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I was just saying it seems like there's always been elite deviance. I think there's even a sociological theory called elite deviance theory. And I'm surprised that people, you know, are just catching on to it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And like it, I think it's like the further you go up the food chain, the less people there are to tell you no. But also like, especially if you're like a statesman or intelligence asset or whatever, independent figure, I don't know what you want to call them. There's kind of no one to tell you no. Like there's no one to stop you from doing it. And certainly if people think they're doing something for a cause, which I don't know if Epstein did, but like, you know, other sort of similar cases, I don't think that, that people can talk themselves into pretty much anything.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, they're so stratified, like the sort of elites, they live in a whole different world from us.
For sure. You
know? So, yeah. I mean, their mores are going to be completely different. You know, nothing is off limits.
Exactly. And if you are a like regular person and you're a fucking sicko or whatever, you don't have the sort of access that these guys have, right? Like if there was like a guy who worked at like, you know, Starbucks, who was like a Jeffrey Epstein type figure, just, you know, sexually speaking, he had the same desires, same, you know, whatever. There's no way that that guy is getting like hundreds of 14-year-olds to come to his house with a promise of $300 for a massage, right? Like that guy is just like, I mean, he's probably going to try and do it a few times, but like, you know, there's much more likely he'll get caught, that if he gets caught, there'll be consequences and that he'll frankly just have like a smaller victim footprint. I mean, it's the jet alone really, really puts Epstein on sort of another predator level.
Well, the thing I don't get is like, and I don't know if things have changed. I've sort of been off and on with the case. You guys have probably picked up on it a lot more. I think the last show I did on it was last August, actually. So it's been a while. I'm glad you guys have picked up on it. But the thing is, I just don't know. How does this – it doesn't appear that he was – really good at anything other than abusing young kids.
And correct.
He wasn't even good at covering that up. And I don't know how did he get all this money? Has there been any insight into that?
That is what's so astounding, because Epstein really is, from like all appearances, pretty like bad at a lot of things. I mean, it's pretty clear that he was like – there is something of like the virtuoso about him in some ways, right? Like I've heard a bunch of reports that he was really good at piano from a lot of people pretty much naturally, which is, I think, a sign of a certain kind of mind where you can do stuff. He was like, it looked like he was pretty good at some financial stuff, although it's extremely vague at exactly what that is, but he at least knew how to navigate that world pretty well. At least like, on like a natural level. I'm not sure he really ever excelled at it, but like, I mean, if you look at this guy's career trajectory, he dropped out of college twice, which no disrespect on that. I did it once. Immediately got a job after driving a taxi cab, a job teaching at this really prestigious private high school in New York. From there, he impresses a guy so much at a parent teacher conference, he gets hired as a floor trader at Bear Stearns, makes junior partner in 4 years, which, you know, I'm not a Bear Stearns guy, but apparently it was the most meteoric rise in their history. And then from there sort of breaks out onto his own. And it's really unclear, even from his former coworkers, he apparently worked with Hoffenberg on the Ponzi scheme that Hoffenberg did famously, might've ratted him out, although it's kind of unclear, but he really like gets all his money and comes into this like really dominant financial position when Leslie Wexner, the CEO of
Victoria's Secrets, right?
L Brands Group, which is Victoria's Secret, I think Bed Bath and Body Works or Bed Bath and Beyond, I can't remember, one of the Bed Bath stores, a bunch of other shit. He essentially gives Epstein like an incredible amount of power for someone you know very well, let alone a guy like Epstein, who he didn't really know that well at first. Although a lot of evidence does lead me to believe that they were at one point maybe lovers, or maybe he was in like a predator whatever situation with Wexner. But Wexner gives him power of attorney, which means he can hire and fire anyone at any of his companies. He has basically full control of his finances, total control of his philanthropy. Like, I mean, he gives him everything. And overnight basically makes Epstein a billionaire. And now Epstein had in the early 90s also been doing some, or at least claiming to be doing some work for the US government, where he would tell people that he was basically a financial bounty hunter for the CIA, where it's really obviously unclear what he means by that. But he would go retrieve money for the CIA from people. Now, of course, he makes it sound like he's out in Angola, getting checks from Savimbi or something, you know, some returns on some rifles or whatever. But that could very well just be like a financial, like, you know, helping in some matters like that. It's really unclear. But what is clear is that he was pretty open about doing intelligence work. And so that, I think, maybe combined with him getting into bed, you know, with pun intended there, with Wexner, I think that was sort of the perfect set of circumstances to bring him where he ended up.
So speaking of the intelligence aspect, I know a lot of people wanted to jump on the sort of, I guess, like, oh, I bet he was involved with Mossad,
yeah,
type thing. Like, what do you make of that?
Is that my phone? Sorry, my phone's going off right when you said Mossad. So, well, I mean, to be fair, I do think he was involved with Mossad in some way. I mean, Ehud Barak, you know, former, I think, director of military intelligence, former prime minister of Israel, went to his apartment, in his own words, less than 100 times, but more than 10. I think it's, I don't see any evidence that says he just worked for Mossad. And I think that, like, framing it as like Epstein was an employee of like a certain intelligence agency is false, right? Like, I mean, looking at any post-World War II history, these sort of networks and alliances have, you know, not necessarily national borders. A lot of the times, you know, these sort of like subterranean networks, you know, have people
Gladio.
From all kinds of different, what's up?
I said Gladio.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. Have people from all different countries, all different intelligence agencies, sometimes without even the blessing of their own, although I'm not saying that's what happened here. You know, the thing is, I can't blame people for thinking that, and I can't even say they're wrong, because, you know, he was obviously very intimately involved with the soon-to-be late Ghislaine Maxwell, whose father, Robert Maxwell, was, of course, he was a man who wore many hats, but one of those was spy for Israel. And, you know, for instance, he helped kidnap the whistleblower for
Mordecai Vanunu.
Yeah, exactly. Which, love Vanunu, great name. But he helped basically facilitated black bagging Vanunu and brought his ass back to Israel for a fucking closed door trial. You know, he was involved with the Selling of Promise software. And you know, the best theory I've heard for the end of Robert Maxwell's life is that, okay, he had stolen, you know, for those who don't know, Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, was the head of, I believe it was the Mirror group of newspapers in Britain. But he was like a Rupert Murdoch, except kind of like he was a labor counselor too, or MP rather. But he had stolen £200 million or quid from his employee's pension fund, and knew he was about to get caught, and was trying to blackmail his former / current employers at Israel intelligence to give him a bunch of money, or else he'd rat him out, which is classic snitching. And then he was he fell off of his yacht, the Lady Ghislaine, and drowned. And Ghislaine, the real Lady Ghislaine, was one of the first people to visit. She flew right into, I think it was the Canary Islands, burned a bunch of his papers. And then for years after said it was this Sicilian mob and Israel that killed her father. Now, all right, it is a little strange that she herself would then start working for the state of Israel, although definitely not impossible. But my guess with Epstein is that he was more of an asset rather than like a direct agent, right? Like somebody that wealthy, I don't think really needs to work for the CIA or Israel like directly. And again, this is literally all just my guess, but the fact of the matter is I have a feeling he's a guy whose services were available to basically anyone who could pay him or if there was any way he could get something out of the deal. I don't think though that as it stands, he was the top of some scheme. Like Epstein doesn't seem to me to be smart enough really to be in charge of a scheme. I think if we're looking at that, like who might've been making a lot of decisions here, I would hazard a guess that Ghislaine could be.
You know, that's what I was going to bring up next was, in a lot of ways, I've got a cough. Hopefully, I don't
get the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, oh, hold on. We have a special guest coming in.
All right. Bob Marlin. Marlin and me. Hold on. I need my actual toothpick.
Hey, how's it going? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
The French correspondent to Parallax Views, Marlon Ettinger, has joined us. Special bonjour. Guest.
Bonjour, monsieur. Race? Belden. No, it's Belden, not Race.
Belden. Hey, Belden. Actually, yeah. A Belgian last name, apparently. I found out recently. I think country. It means like sheriff.
Well, it's not a real country. I'm sorry to break it to you.
No. I too am connected to the Flemish resistance movement, so I'm with you.
So what did I come in on? What were you discussing?
We were just going to talk about how Jeffrey Epstein is almost infinitely more boring than Ghislaine Maxwell, or at least that's my take.
I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah, well, he's boring by the virtue that he's dead. You know, there's not going to be anything more. Coming from him. It's interesting that I'm, you know, in France right now because, of course, Ghislaine is from France as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has French citizenship.
That's right. Yeah, she was born in France and, you know, she still has a home in France. And in fact, it's surprising to me that she didn't go to France. I don't know what her thinking was.
France? I agree with that because from what I... you know, understand about France is that it's kind of the place you go when you're a fugitive, a European fugitive rather. Famously, it's where like a lot of, you know, persecuted political people go and where a lot of just regular criminals go too. So yeah, I was shocked that she didn't go there.
Particularly sex pests because, you know, as nice and romantic as France is, their laws on this stuff is terrible. You know, they barely have an age of consent. They tried to pass one, I think it was like 2 years ago, to bring it up to age 15, but it couldn't get through the National Assembly. And the National Assembly, by the way, was one where the governing party had a huge majority. So they could get through any law they wanted, but they couldn't get that one through. So the disappointing thing is about that whole case is there's so much of it that happens in Paris and in France and the south of France that's never going to be prosecuted here because a lot of it simply isn't illegal here.
So I actually have a question, not to ask any questions on your show, I know that there was an investigation opened into Jean-Luc. Mm. I mean the latest of many throughout his life investigations into Jean-Luc Brunel there. And Epstein, I know that like, I can't remember where I read it, but you know, I know that they had identified that there were some victims. What is I take it this case doesn't have the legs there that it does here.
No. Well, there were two cases that were opened when Jeffrey Epstein was arrested last year in France by the procurator of Paris, which isn't a magistrate. It's a distinction that I don't understand completely, but, you know, the procurator has fewer powers to investigate and stuff. And basically it got stonewalled. A few months later, there was, you know, accounts in the press from victims and non-governmental organizations. One particularly called like Innocence en Danger, Innocence in Danger, obviously, saying that, you know, they've just been stonewalled. The police aren't following up any leads. They're not talking to any of the victims. And the same thing happened with Brunel. There was an initial case open, and there were a flurry of press accounts of models, you know, testifying that he had drugged them and raped them back in the 90s, most of them. But they are outside of the statute of limitations, so there was no follow-up on them. And then Brunel, supposedly was in negotiations to talk with investigators, but it was not like a formal interrogation. It was like, I'll come and clear some things up for you. And I don't know if that did or didn't happen, but it's basically disappeared.
Yeah, so we hadn't mentioned Brunel before you came on, but for listeners who don't know who Brunel is, Jean-Luc Brunel is a former, well, current, technically, model scout who has basically been accused of rape many times since like the early 70s, you know, famously like a, you know, they used to call them womanizers. I think there's a couple other different names for them now. But, you know, he's the kind of guy who you'd expect to be a sleazy little greasy motherfucker in like a very long lapelled, wide lapelled jackets who,
long wavy hair.
Yes. Yeah. Who would, you know, do the classic model scout thing, which by the way, they still do all the time. Oh, there's a million Brunels out there.
Right.
Where he's like, you know, casting couch bullshit, but he would also drug girls and at, you know, he came to be involved with Epstein. And eventually Epstein invested in a modeling business called MC2, which was supposed to be like M equals MC squared, but the E was silent. And that stood for Epstein, the silent partner. I don't know how true that is. It's been reported a lot of places, but I choose to believe it. And you know, in the testimony that you can read from like the 2006 case and then like the 2016 Virginia Jeffrey defamation case talks about him a lot in that he was one of the guys that was procuring young girls from other countries for Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, I believe I heard rumors that, you know, Epstein's youngest girls came from Brunel.
Well, one girl, this isn't confirmed that this happened, but, you know, you can kind of put two and two together. One of Epstein's charges was a 14-year-old girl he purchased from her family in the former Yugoslavia. Although I've seen reports that her family was from Czechoslovakia and then they moved to Yugoslavia. It's kind of unclear whether people are just like mixing places up there. But this girl, Nadia Marchenko, he bought at age 14 and then basically kept around in this East 66th Street apartment building until she became an adult and essentially started working for him as, you know, like sort of a lieutenant to Ghislaine.
Yeah, well, even in one of the depositions, Jeffrey mentions that a story of, I think it was 3 12-year-old French girls that Brunel had flown over to Epstein as a birthday present.
Yeah, there's a message pad memo that Ghislaine had written out basically corroborating that too, I believe.
Oh yeah, and as to Ghislaine, it was Ghislaine who introduced Brunel to Epstein. The reason Brunel founded MC2 Models in New York was because his career had sort of taken a hit in Paris, because in 1988 there was this expose by 60 Minutes that basically, you know, preying on all his young models and Ford modeling like broke with him, pretending they didn't know anything about it. I mean, take it with a grain of salt. But anyway, his name was sort of mud in Paris for a little bit, and that's why he came to America. And Ghislaine also had recently come to America at the same time for the same reason. You know, her father had died, and the pension scandal came out about Robert Maxwell, where he had been looting all his employees' pensions from the newspapers. So she also came to New York, and they were reestablishing themselves at the same time, you know. And so they were sort of kindred spirits in many ways.
Yeah.
How much of this do you guys think goes back to like various modeling agencies? I feel like that's an aspect that only a few people have really covered. I know it's been a big deal for Ed Opperman and the Opperman Report. I know people rag on Ed and say he can be a little bit out there. I've always liked Ed, though, and I think he's
love
pretty
Ed.
Good.
I love Ed. Plus, he's got a listen, I don't know if Mr. Opperman is Jewish, but as a Jew, I envy the guy's voice because he sounds like I feel like I should sound.
How I wish he could sound, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Ed Opperman is out there, and you know what? That's because that's where it all is. It's all out there.
Yeah.
He's getting it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think definitely the modeling connection is there. I wish I had done – I'd love at one point to do, you know, find out more about these connections. But, you know, Virginia Giuffre has said that Burnell supplied Epstein with thousands of girls. And mm-hmm. how did he get the girls? From modeling agencies, you know? And basically MC2 was almost like a front for that. There's a deposition from a former employee of Burnell's whose name I – forget off the top of my head. I think it's from a 2006 case.
Yeah.
And she,
is
you know,
it the house cleaner?
It's not the house cleaner.
Oh, the bookkeeper. Like the bookkeeper.
The bookkeeper. That's it. Yeah. And she, you know, mentions how he was bringing in all these girls, which isn't surprising, you know. And there was, I got to tell you, there was a really interesting story in 20 minutes on July 3rd. 20 minutes is like a French version of 60 minutes. This guy did a sort of investigative deep dive into Burnell. And when Burnell came to New York, he bought a hotel, he bought an apartment in Trump Tower, and there was this photographer, something Nelson, who worked for the Click Photography Agency, and he said Burnell was always with two other people, Donald Trump and Paolo Zamparelli. And Paolo Zamparelli was this Italian modeling agent. And Zamparelli is really interesting, because it was Zamparelli who introduced Melania now to Donald Trump.
Yep. That's very good to bring that up, because my theory on Trump and Melania is that he met her through a similar, if more legal, version of what Burnell was doing for Epstein, where she was basically imported. I mean, that's like... The thing about – so in that 2006 – that transcript of the 2006 case too, that bookkeeper, I believe it says – or I believe it is – says that Burnell was able to secure visas and passports from the State Department at like really expedited like rates. And I mean rates of time rather than rates of money. I don't know how much the money was. For 14-year-old girls from like fucking Poland. Which, you know, I'm no expert on immigration, right? But I don't think it's that easy to get like hundreds of passports for 14-year-old girls you bring in from Brazil. Right. Could be wrong, but like that seems to me that maybe these girls were being used, you know. I think people know, basically anyone listening to this, I'm sure that you know what's going on like in modeling. You can kind of guess. That all this shit, like the Weinstein thing was like, they fucking, I mean, obviously that's acting, but it's very similar the way they do it. Like they're all Weinsteins, right? And like, they're all Brunels, maybe not as bad, but like that shit like is the entirety of the industry. But I think that like, yeah, this was a tolerated. That's the astounding thing to me about this is how tolerated it was by how many people for how long. It's just incredible.
And you know what? It still is in the modeling world. It still is. When this flurry of stories came out with these women testifying that Burnell had drugged them and raped them, they all told a really similar story. You know, they came from like Iowa, or they came from, you know, Wisconsin, and they arrived in Paris and they were taught manners and how to dress and how to have dinner with these old men, and they were all, you know, obviously it's not, they were expected to sleep with them.
Yeah.
It's not a surprise, but it's just systematic. It's how it works. And I can't,
yeah.
I don't know, JG or Brace, do you know anybody who's been involved in that business in any more recent times that might have any insight into if
yes.
that is how it still works?
Yes. And yes. It's for sure how it still works.
No, we'll go on, yeah. go on. Yeah.
Oh, basically, like if you're like a pretty young thing or whatever, and move to London, L.A., New York, and you like try to break into this world without having like connections from already being rich or whatever, like obviously not 100% of people, but like still a huge, huge percent of people are basically expected to sleep with, you know, whoever to get a job. And it's guys too in LA, obviously not as much, but like in LA, at least in acting, a lot of guys are expected to do this too. So you know, it's like across the board.
I was going to comment a few months ago, I had a chance to interview Nathan Forrest Winters, who he's in this 1980s horror movie called Clown House.
Uh-huh.
He was like 10 years old at the time. It's directed by this guy, Victor Salva.
Yes.
He literally made fucking porno tapes for his personal collection of his, you know, violating this fucking kid. And then he ends up getting out of jail and making fucking Disney movies.
Wait, the like kid you interviewed was the kid?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nathan Forrest Winters. And fucking Salva's still making those Jeepers Creepers movies. And yep. Each one gets even more explicit in referencing his own perversions.
Look at fucking Bryan Singer.
Right, yeah.
Bryan Singer's still chill. Look at fucking all these fucking... Look at David Geffen. David Geffen's like the richest dude out there. People, Oprah is fucking right now smoking a doink with Geffen on his fucking yacht doing instant coronavirus tests like they're fucking lines of ketamine. And this guy is like, you know, he's a million. He's like Weinstein times two.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. That's one thing that bothers me about some of the coverage of the Epstein case. Like even people that I sort of have respect for, like Vicky Ward, you know, I respect Vicky Ward, but she was pretty close with Ghislaine Maxwell. Well, go on.
Go off.
No, I don't respect Vicky Ward. You know, she covered it up. You know, Maria Farmer says it. She covered up their story. She was friends with Ghislaine Maxwell. She was still hanging out with her. That recent documentary that came out, she got paid a ton of money for it. I don't
Did
respect
she really?
Vicky Ward. Yeah.
Yeah. Vicky Ward, until recently, had a screed on her website, which rather pathetically was in the Vanity Fair font. Basically a soft defense of herself, or like a hard defense of herself and a soft defense of Ghislaine. But my view of it is all those people, if you were at a party with Ghislaine Maxwell post 2006 and really pre 2006, but really post 2006, you're not allowed to talk about it. Like you got to sit this one out.
Well, you know, another one that I was going to mention is, you know, Conchita Sarnoff, Miss like, oh, there's no way Trump was connected to any of this.
Oh,
it's all Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, well,
a lot of people want to do that where that's like, I saw someone talking about it earlier. It's like, it's insane that like the two big like owns right now are like the partisans of these two fucking stupid ass political parties posting a picture of the other one's guy with Epstein, when it's like, it's incredible. I mean, the way the Trump people have reacted to the Epstein stuff has just been pure. It's basically like this. It's like secular QAnon, where they're like, well, no, Trump wasn't. Trump actually kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago or whatever. Like, yeah, after
which is a rumor, and it's a rumor.
Yeah,
not substantiated.
And
they point to Bradley Edwards saying that he heard the rumor too, and that's enough evidence for them.
Yeah. And it's like, we have no idea what he and fucking Epstein got up to before then. It's obvious that they were friends. You know, you know, he hung out with Ghislaine. I think it's like people focus too much on him hanging out with Epstein rather than his relationship to Ghislaine, because fucking Trump was front row center at those Victoria's Secret fashion shows. And Epstein at the time was, you know, leveraging his relationship with Victoria's Secret to have sex with young girls. Those fashion shows are basically fucking buffet, or not buffet, it's a la carte menus for the fucking rich guys in the front row. They see a girl they like, they fucking whisper to somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell, get that girl over, and then they have sex.
Like those Japanese restaurants you go where it's all on a treadmill, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, and the relationship with Ghislaine is really interesting. Have you guys talked about that yet?
We didn't talk enough about Ghislaine. I guess the one thing I wanted to really nail home, because I think a lot of people will be like, oh, Ghislaine Maxwell, she's going to be the next one dead, just like Epstein. But like when you get, just to get serious about it, like people do not realize, everyone says Ghislaine Maxwell is like Epstein's procurer, like his personal pimp. It's much deeper than that. Like she was sadistic.
For sure.
Like she was a participant in the abuse.
She's a rapist. She's a serial rapist.
Exactly. I think it's maybe just because he's a woman that like the media was like, oh, she's his madam or his procurer. But it's like, no, she was like raping children with him. And she was sick in other ways too. Like she would call some girls her slave. She told girls to call her mama or mother hen or shit like that. Like, you know, I was sort of surprised, and it's like, especially, you know, coming from looking at stuff on the internet, the way that the SDNY described her, because they use the word grooming so many times, you'd think that they were talking about a political chat in a Discord server. That ads. She was like, I mean, Epstein was a rapist for sure, but like Ghislaine did the footwork there. Like she was the one who got these girls. Like Epstein was just like, you know, lying like an asshole naked on a massage table. But I don't know. Ghislaine is to me a more sinister figure, or I mean, equally obviously in most ways, but a more.
Well, why is that? Why do you consider her more sinister?
Because Epstein is just your run of the mill piece of shit pervert, obviously with other right. connections. But right, like he's just like. You know, if a lot of Epstein's activities, if you bump the girls' ages up, he would basically be no different than most fucking people who work in modeling or acting or anything like that. I mean, maybe the scale of it. But like, you know, putting aside the, you know, the intelligence stuff. But Ghislaine was like, I mean, this was her passion, right? Like she spent what appears to be the vast majority of her time procuring and then grooming girls for Epstein.
You know, it's funny. I always tell people this story. Like if you've ever talked to like an old school grizzled vice cop, one thing I've always heard from like vice cops is they'll be like, there's like two kinds of pimps. There's like, you know, there's the ethnic pimps. There's like you got black and you got Latino pimps, and they do it because like, you know, they're just trying to hustle and survive. And then you have the white pimps, and they do it because they fucking enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the case with Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, she was good at it. You can't say she wasn't good at it. And through her, Epstein met like, I mean, Epstein was a rich guy before he met her, but not that rich. But when through her, I mean, that's like, that's when you get Epstein hanging out with Prince Andrew. That's when you get Epstein hanging out with Bill Clinton. Like,
yep.
Ghislaine really like bumped him up. You know, we don't have a full view of the relationship yet. Maybe we'll get it from whatever testimony she gives. I kind of doubt it. But they had this like, it's a dialectical relationship, right? Like they combined and they made something new, which was access to young girls from rich people and videotapes of them having that access.
You know, in regards to all this, we haven't really talked, I think, enough about the survivors, the victims. You recently had a chance to interview Maria Farmer.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Because I know a lot of people want to say now, oh, Virginia, she's like a bit eccentric, or Maria Farmer's a bit out there. And I hate all this throwing shade at the victims.
Well, for sure. Here's the thing. If I was the victim of a giant pedophile conspiracy, I would be much more open to conspiracies about pedophiles, if that makes any sense.
I mean, yeah. Makes complete sense.
Like, go on, Marlon.
Well, yeah, because think of what happened. You know, what happened to Maria? She had to go on the run for decades. Virginia, she had to go on the run for decades. All these people had to go on the run for decades. There were people chasing them their entire lives. It's like, you know, you're not paranoid if they really have to get you. And in their case, they really were out to get them. So I wouldn't even call them paranoid, you know? I mean, right? They went through all that. And I agree, yeah.
Maybe they are, I'm sure that they get into some kind of out there theories about it, but like I would too, you know, trauma does fuck, you know, it really fucks with you. I've known people who were victims of sexual violence as children by like their, you know, relatives or whoever. And that fucks you. I can't imagine being the victim of people who are just so powerful and literally like friends with the Clintons and Trump, you know, the president, for Christ's sake. It's incredible, but like also, you know, nothing Virginia has said so far in her testimony seems to have been incorrect.
In their testimony. And that's the important thing. I don't know if you saw that, the Spectator article that Dershowitz wrote.
Oh, recently. Yeah, the Dershowitz thing. Yeah,
it's
I wanted to get to that.
Class. Dershowitz is a good lawyer. He's a good rhetorician. He's really smart. If you read that article without knowing a little bit about the case, you could be convinced by it. But he does, and I'm glad you said everything she said in her testimony is correct. It's the same with every other victim. Everything they said in their testimony is, as far as I know, correct. But yeah. Dershowitz did this thing in the first paragraph where he said, first, in the first part, he says, you know, Giffray says that she was abused and trafficked by Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein for years, and also that she met Al Gore and his wife. And he has it in the same sentence, but she never claimed she met Al Gore and his wife in court. It was in an unpublished manuscript, which is not a legal claim, you know? Every claim she's made under penalty of perjury has been proven correct or has not been disproven.
That's the
so
thing.
So whatever you want to say, you know, yeah, that's the thing.
Exactly. Like that's the thing is like, I don't care. I mean, I care, but like, the court doesn't care. Virginia can write whatever she wants. She can start, you know, writing, Tumblr fan fiction for all that matters to the court. It's the fact that what everything she said under oath so far has been proven out to be true. I mean, the Prince Andrew thing, for Christ's sake, like you don't, you know, like that sounds fucking crazy when you describe it. Okay.
Yep.
This British royal literally groped me while holding a puppet, a grotesque puppet of his own likeness. Incredible. But it actually happened, right? Like it by all appearances that happened. And so like Dershowitz is not making the case. He's making an okay case to the
people who don't know about the case.
Yeah, or people who read The Spectator who are like, yeah, rape's all right. But I think Dershowitz has been cut loose by the powers that be. They don't care. I don't know if he'll go down for this just because he's such like a legal freak that I'm sure he can find some way out of it. But like Dershowitz is not, he's obviously fallen out of the favors of, I was surprised he'd get published in The Spectator. Because he's lately been writing, you know, articles for shit called like Newsbusters and stuff like
Newsmax,
that.
Newsmax, yeah.
Newsmax, yeah. Like shit that is like not, it's like D-tier fucking.
Did you guys see that latest tweet that he did where he was like, I hope that they release all of Epstein's videos, if he has any, those secret videos, because that will exonerate me. I hope they release them. I was like, what is going on?
Well, he probably... That probably means that he did it somewhere that wasn't videotaped. But also, they won't release the videos because you can't watch the videos. If the FBI, which they would never do regardless of this, if the FBI released the videos, they would be videos of children getting molested. So no, no one can ever watch the videos. It's kind of like, I don't, not that I'm jumping at the bit to watch a video of any of this, you know, sexual violence or anything, but it is an interesting sort of thing to think about that, like, literally the FBI, regardless of whether they want to, and I do not think they want to release the videos, you couldn't watch them anyways because it would be literally a fucking felony to watch the videos.
Now, if I get controversial here for a second, when it comes to, you know, who killed Epstein, right? I've said to people, and you can disagree with this, part of me would totally understand Epstein killing himself. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's because he was such a fucking coward. Yeah. Like, the dude would do anything not to go to jail. I mean, like, the work release program, that fucking cushy shit that he got the first time around. I'm like, he would totally off himself. But what do you guys think of the who killed Epstein thing? Do you want to take that one, Brace?
What's up?
Do you want to take that one? Do you want to answer?
Sure. I think it's entirely – sorry. That's a smoker thing, not a COVID thing. I think it's entirely possible that Epstein killed himself. Now, did he kill himself because he wanted to kill himself, or did he kill himself because maybe someone told him that that's what he better do? I don't know. But I'm not totally sold on any theory. I think it's totally plausible that he kills himself. But I also think it's totally plausible that other people, or that he facilitated the circumstances where that would be a easy possibility. If you look at the photos of the cell, I've been to jail. I haven't been to the MCC in Manhattan, but I've been to jail on more than one occasion. This guy had a lot of sheets. I mean, it's the man's room was looked like a goddamn Bed Bath and Beyond. A lot of fucking sheets. But I think people got too hung up on whether it was physically possible or anything like that. I think it's astounding the way he did do it, because killing yourself like that by hanging yourself, but by thrusting your head downwards until your neck snaps is pretty incredible. You know, it's hard to believe, but it's not unbelievable. That being said, I don't rule out the possibility that at all whatsoever that he was killed by somebody else. But I think it's sort of like a, you know, if he was killed by somebody, it's not like fucking, you know, Ed Lansdale snuck in there and snapped his neck or whatever. If he was killed by somebody, he was killed by somebody who they couldn't immediately trace back to anybody.
What do you, getting back to, or Marlon, did you want to add something?
No, I just say my smell test is he was murdered, but I have really no insight into that. I just think he was. No insight that hasn't been rehashed 100 times over somewhere else. Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely gotten more paranoid about it as time goes by.
I don't even think it's like, I think either option, the fact that he was allowed, there hasn't been a suicide there, I think 30 years until he did it. But I think whatever option you have, I think it's basically impossible that they're not impossible. I will never say that, but it's highly improbable that it wasn't facilitated by, and whether it was facilitated by someone doing it for him or by somebody giving him the means, I don't know.
What? So I asked earlier, what was your impression of Maria Farmer when you interviewed her? I want to say something here. I did not know what to think of TruAnon at first. I was like, is this like a comedy thing? Are they serious about it? But once I heard the Farmer interview, I was like, okay, you guys are like in for real. And I want to say I respect that. And if I ever said anything, you know, if I ever had any doubts about TruAnon, apologies.
Oh, I definitely had doubts about TruAnon, but I liked the interview too.
I'm a fucking freak, man. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to, like, the thing is, I'm not like a journalist and I'm not very smart, but I do think that I can not necessarily me, but I think that the case is solvable. And I don't know what solvable means. I have no parameters for what that answer is, but I think that there is an answer. And Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know what the fuck we're doing with the podcast. I'm just, you know, we're just rocking and rolling. But like, I do like deeply, I am deeply obsessed with figuring this out. Right. Mm-hmm. Like to the point, like I went like a little crazy over the past. I'm kind of calmed down now, but
well, I was just going to say real quickly. I mean, I've communicated with Virginia, just on Twitter, and I'm like, sometimes when people make the Epstein jokes, I can get really, you know, I get upset sometimes because I'm like, have you talked to the victims, yo? You know, so that's why I was asking about like, what was your feelings going through the farmer interview? I think it was probably a difficult thing in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's so. Yes, it was. I mean, I'm like a counselor. That's like, I was a counselor before this. And I technically still am, although I'm furloughed right now for it's a drug counselor, but you deal with a lot of people with a lot of trauma, you know, it's like a lot of goes hand in hand. And so like, I have some experience talking to people who are like pretty, you know, damaged by stuff. Maria, though, I communicated with her a bunch before we did it. And I don't know, it was like, she was literally the nicest guest we've ever had. Like, just super sweet, like, really understanding. I've wanted to, we were actually after an interview with another victim for like a few months, I was trying to get it, but who is not like one of the big sort of public ones. Although she was involved in the court case, she decided she didn't want to do any interviews, not just with us or anything. Hmm. But it was, I don't know. It was a heavy, heavy while we did it. Right. Like it was, I think basically everybody cried during it at one point. But I don't know. I just like, the thing is, I wasn't like a giant fan of that Epstein Netflix documentary. I don't, you know, it's not like a terrible documentary or anything. I just don't think it like, it misses a lot of stuff. And I think that there are constraints where like, even if the directors wanted to, which I don't know if they did, they probably couldn't talk about it. But I do think the one really, really important aspect of that was that it had a lot of interviews with victims.
Marlon, yeah. you have it's anything?
I was moved by that interview too, and I've sort of, as I pursue my own obsession, I've talked with, you know, some of the victims, and it is really does give you, it's heavy. It makes people real, you know.
Yeah.
They're real people. I think for so many people, the case is sort of like a cartoon, not a cartoon, but it's like a show. They're characters, and they're all real people who went through real stuff. I particularly felt that when I was in New York around the time Jeffrey Epstein was in the court, and I went to the courthouse a few times and I saw all these people, and it was really, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, these are famous people. It was like, wow, I read these names so much and they're real people and they're really there. I just sort of wanted to wrap up because I'm going to have to go in about 5 minutes, but Race, I liked what you had to say about it being solvable. And I was wondering, what are you looking at right now? Because I know there's some stuff that I'm obsessed with right now, you know, Jean-Luc Brunel. I'm trying to look through all the old, I think, gossip magazines here. The libraries are open now, so I can look through all the bound copies and just find more stuff about that. But what is like the solvable things that you're looking for right now?
Well, that's actually, you talk about I assume these are French gossip magazines, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
That my dad, for some inexplicable reason, majored in French in the 60s and still speaks it a little bit. And so I've had him, what do you call it? I put him on the Brunel beat because I can't speak French. And so
I'll have to talk to him.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. He's pretty old, so I'm not sure how far he's gotten. But I'd love to talk to you more about that too. I think that the Brunel thing is a huge connection. But I've been all Ghislaine for the past like 6 or 7 months. Like it's like, I haven't really like, We found out that, like, for instance, her cousin was one of two people, her nephew was one of two people basically put forth by Clinton for a State Department job in the Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs. And we found out some stuff about another nephew, but I didn't really feel comfortable talking about it on the show, but connections, certain political connections. I just think her whole family is really key to this. And I don't think that they're all necessarily I have no evidence that they're all in some conspiracy together. I don't know that. I don't know if they are. I don't know if they aren't. But I think that family is just so emblematic of, like, the kind of depravity of a certain upper class, from Ghislaine's ex-boyfriend's, possible involvement in the 2004 attempted coup in Equatorial Guinea, to her connection to the royal family. I think that, like, yeah, I read a book about her dad. I've been reading a lot more about her father. And I want to do, like, kind of a mini series about just her dad. Yeah. And so essentially just the Maxwells I've been looking into. There's so much that, like, I wish I could just talk to Ghislaine, because there's so many questions I have just about how so much of this stuff was facilitated. You know, even, like, going back to the State Department thing and passports for Brunel, or there's one thing that I've been really, like, thinking about a lot, is that I can't find it. I looked through, I have all the testimony printed out. I was looking through all of it yesterday to try to find this, but there is testimony out there that describes Brunel having a connection with, or I don't even know if it's named, but it's sort of implied it's Brunel having a connection with this woman in Brazil who he appears to buy children from, get models from or whatever. And, I think it's noteworthy that he was in South America, right before this all went bad, and then was rumored to be in Brazil. Although those rumors about him and Ghislaine being in Brazil, I think were mostly bullshit.
Does anyone know where Brunel is now? I mean,
okay. No, well, the last trace I heard of Brunel was one of his ex-lawyer, France Inter, which is like the NPR in France, talked with his lawyer. And they asked him, about these rumors that he's in Brazil. And he said, well, maybe, because he does know someone there, which, when you said that woman, sparked off. But Glenn, the lawyer, said he's more likely in Thailand. He has a friend there. And I haven't been able to find anything more about that, but that's the last I heard.
Well, that is where Virginia was headed before she escaped. Yeah. I know. And that's, so a lot of, this isn't really mentioned much, but Epstein's victims, predominantly white, predominantly a certain type of white person. And in that Bradley Edwards book, he recounts one of the girls saying that she had brought a black girl over and that he had just kicked them out straight away and said to never do that again. But it is interesting that this is the implied existence of Asian victims. Although, as far as I know, none have, like, come forward or anything like that. But that could be a whole other side of this that we have no idea about, because, they clearly were very interested in Thailand, maybe for its massage, but probably also because it's an easy place for neither of you are British, but for Ghislaine, she's like, damn, every British guy who's over 60 goes there on a sex tourism vacation every year. It's
100%. And it's like you said about the family, I have to run, but it's like you said about that family, it really just illustrates what the story really is about, which is just the impunity of these people, of this ruling class, and totally. How they'll do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think that more than anything, that's like what really is sort of the broad thing here is about sort of, the just incredible decadence and depravity. And impunity that these people, they never get in trouble for anything, and they still barely get in trouble.
10-4, yeah. Well, I do have to run now, so good talking to you guys.
Marlon, let's talk more soon.
Yes, let's do it. I'll see JG. See you, Brace.
Peace out. Brace, do you have, an extra 20 minutes you can go, or?
Let's roll, baby.
Awesome, awesome. You know, in regards to how Truanon approaches the Epstein case, what is your sort of like inspiration for the approach to Truanon? I know you've had Mark Ames on. Are you a big fan of like The Exiled and that sort of sardonic approach?
So I sort of naturally come from that approach because like the one thing that I'm naturally good at is I'm kind of funny. And like, that's just like, that's always been my style of communicating. And I think like, this isn't intentional, but I think it's like effective because people, it's first of all, easy to take heavy information like that. Second of all, that's how a lot of people in sort of my age cohort, you know, communicate, or our age cohort communicate. Third, I'm just like, it's how I talk naturally, but also like, yeah, the sort of exiled style, but like the people I like look up to are like fucking, well, pre sellout Lavenda, but like, although, you know, I know that's very controversial, but like
Lavenda as in
Peter Lavenda.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know
people really dislike him now because of his weird involvement with Podesta over the alien stuff, which is such an absurd sentence to be saying. But I just really I'm an amateur Jungian. Right. And so like, I'm like teaching myself how to figure this stuff out. But like, I've sort of become obsessed, not obsessed in a weird way, but like, I think symbols are really important, and that's like kind of how I try to parse through this stuff like analytically. But I mean, obviously the ultimate idol is Opperman because he's not only a radio host, but an actual private detective, which is what we all aspire to be. But yeah, I think like what you mentioned earlier, it's like, yeah, like we do like a lot of jokes, right? But like we try to like, and not always succeed, but we try to like not have the tone just be jokey. Like when we talk about serious stuff. But like, I think the combo that I'm good at, and the only one I can do, if I try to do another one, I don't think I could do it, is like unserious stuff to draw people in and then serious stuff once they are drawn in.
See, what I was going to say is, and I know it's like, way before both our times, but when I first started listening to Truanon or even Chapo,
yeah,
I was like, oh, this reminds me of like what the Yippies were doing, you know, Abby Hoffman, yeah. Paul Krasner,
yeah.
And people were saying, oh, well, you know, this is just like making fun of suffering. And I'm like, you know, I don't think that's the case. I think you can have sort of a dark sense of humor. And I think the Yippies did it effectively. There's a long tradition of this.
Who's
on the left.
Who's that guy? Fucking, I have a book by one of the guys who, of course, later became like an investment banker.
Ruben?
Ruben, yeah. His book that he wrote back then, I fucking love it. It's totally deranged, but like I'm totally fucking deranged. And so like I really dig it. A lot of that like it's funny because my politics are much more orthodox Marxist, but I really like the rhetorical style of a lot of that 60s stuff, even going from like the Red Army faction to fucking, you know, the way a lot of the people in the 60s communicated. I disagree with their politics in a lot of cases because I think it's adventurous, but like I think it's a really effective way to communicate. Also, it's just like it's talks. If you talk in plain language, people understand you too. And so like, I don't know. The other thing too is like, I'm not an expert, right? Like I haven't read every book. I'm not like a fucking guy who's been like making charts for 30 years, you know, figuring everything out. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a rocker. Like I'm not like a, you know, I'm not like an intellectual. And so like, I'm just trying to figure all this shit out too. It's like, that's always what I try to tell people. Like I'm not an expert on anything. Like I'm learning. I fucking literally spend my entire week, all week, fucking reading about the shit we do for our episodes. Like, if I wish that I just, this is the only shit I can do off the cuff because I just have read about Ghislaine so much. But yeah, I think like, I don't know, you talk about a lot of rock and roll stuff, right?
Yeah, I've had a few rock and rollers on. I had one of the members of Reagan Youth on. I had the drummer from the Dwarves.
So, oh, are you a punk guy?
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, you were in a punk band, right?
Yeah. That's where I'm coming from. You right. See, you fucking get me.
Right.
I want to listen to the Reagan Youth episode after this. I used to write for a punk magazine. That's like how I got for Maximum Rock and Roll. That's how I fucking got my shit. That's how I figured out how to communicate. Yeah, that's like, you know what I'm talking about then. Fucking coming from that milieu.
Right. I mean, well, that's the thing, though. Like, I like this sort of dark humor that makes fun of the ruling class because they deserve it. You know, they deserve that punch in the face with the humor because, you know, what else can we really do? I mean, ultimately, that's the one thing that seems to piss off people like Alan Dershowitz.
Exactly.
When you just mock them, you know?
Yeah. And, like, it takes away, like... I don't know. It takes away something from them because they have this like the rich people's like presence commands like a respect, and that respect commands seriousness. And if
you even see it in like the way Ghislaine Maxwell dresses, right? Like,
for sure,
there's a certain way of dressing, a certain way of carrying yourself. Like, you're gonna respect me because I give this air of opulence. It's like when you take that away from them, what do they have left?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly.
The court jester always reveals that the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, yes. Fuck, it just reminds me. I'm reading this book, The Dwarf, which is really fucking good. There's no reason for me to mention that, but that just reminded me. I'm really enjoying this book. I think that, like, I mean, I'm not, like, there's also, I feel like, a difference between what we do and, like, the, like, sort of, what's that fucking Steven Crowder, like, Epstein didn't kill himself, like, you know, dumb meme shit.
Right.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, I don't know.
Well, what do you make of, you know, the sort of right wing end of this stuff? Because
got
like,
a lot to say there.
Well, it's interesting to me because I've told people that I have like skepticism towards cases a lot of people are really into now. Like even stuff like the Franklin cover up. Yeah. And you may have opinions on that, but like I look at guys like Ted Gunderson or like John DeCamp.
Yeah.
I'm like, John DeCamp was Phoenix program. Like, I don't know if I trust these guys.
Gunderson's a fucking liar, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Like it's yeah, I share that skepticism. But then you fucking start thinking, it's like, well, what if this is happening, but they made it so that these guys revealed it so that, like, it's not, you know, like, they get command of the investigation.
You know, the only person in that whole Franklin cover-up scene, and he's, like, the international man of mystery. I've had trouble getting a hold of him. That I think he's on the good guy's side is Nick Bryant, Franklin scandal. Yeah. But that dude's like, I mean, I think he played a part in the Epstein thing. He got the little black book out there.
Did he?
Yeah. I think he was one of the people that leaked it through Gawker.
Oh.
But I'm like. Yeah,
I think he did.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. You know what? I'm reading that Franklin cover-up book right now. But I agree. Like, there's so much of that weird, like, But then people do it to me too, because my Syria thing, they're like, oh, well, he was in the CIA.
You know, like, funny. Marlon said to me before I said, oh, you should come on and do a surprise appearance. He said, ask Braces if he's CIA.
JG mentioned before, I fought in Syria with the People's Protection Unit, the YPG, with the Kurds, or I was with the mixed ethnicity unit or whatever, who have received, well, weird, my headphones just made it so I can start hearing myself, who've received help from the US, but also from the Syrian government. Very complicated situation. And it looks like they are, like I've said, making nice with the Syrian government, which is something I very much support. But because I didn't get arrested when I got home, people thought that I was in the CIA. Which is kind of funny, which is, I mean, it's like people dug this whole digging in my background thing. Like, well, he was a junkie, and being a junkie is prime recruitment for joining the CIA, which I'm like, I don't know if that is prime recruitment for joining. I feel like that's just something you said that sounds right, but I don't know. But no, I'm not in the CIA. I also said that I think I met a CIA agent out there, but that was pure guessing. I just met like a guy in khakis who kept asking me questions about where I was from, and I told him I was Canadian. But I don't blame people for ever thinking I'm in the CIA. I just am always like, well, what's the point then? You know, why, I don't know. But like you're saying with the Franklin stuff, it's like, it's hard, you know, because people have weird connections. And like, I think the Phoenix program thing should be disqualifying, though. I think if you had a hand in the Phoenix program, you should probably not be able to have a hand in anything else. But I want to assure everybody here, I will take the oath. I'm raising my right hand. I am not, nor have I ever been, even remotely connected to the CIA.
In regards to that right-wing angle, and I believe you.
Yes.
So I believe you did not work for the CIA, but I do want to know.
I work for the DIA.
So what is your take on these like sort of right-wing, we're hunting the pedos on 4chan types, because I have a lot of opinions on them myself.
Oh, yeah. No, so for some reason, right-wing people, it's like those people, you know, like people who like buy a gun and then become obsessed with getting home invaded. They're like, want to be home invaded, or like they concealed carry and they're like, I fucking just wish somebody will fucking call me like a cracker outside of the 7-Eleven or whatever. It's the same kind of instinct, I think, where it's like, you know, I remember like, you know, maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, the big thing on like Facebook for right wingers was like, we're gonna fuck, if you're a pedo, I will beat your fucking ass or whatever. Which is does not, of course, extend to the president of the United States, I guess, but which I guess is technically illegal to threaten to beat his ass. I will say that like the 4chan shit, and like I assume you're also talking about QAnon here.
QAnon and Pizzagate and all that shit. Yeah.
So my theory on Pizzagate, and this is, I preface this totally unsubstantiated. This is something that I'm purely guessing. But think about when Pizzagate came out. That came out during the 2016 election, when Roger Stone was working for Trump, two of the main Pizzagate proponents.
Real quick here. Roger Stone ties into all that fucking NXIVM shit.
Yeah.
With Allison Mack and fucking his buddy Frank Parlato, who was friendly with NXIVM until they pissed him off. And then he's like, I'm going to expose you, but only because you fucked me over.
Yeah.
No one talks about that.
Fucking Stone ties into so much shit. And part of that is because he's a fucking scammer, right? And like a hustler or whatever. But part of that is also like, he's got a lot of fucking sketchy friends. And so my thinking is he's like, I think one of the only guys who would be devious and enough to come up with something like this, is that they created this whole world where all of these people who are actually like, probably are in some ways sex criminals, but like the degree of their crimes just becomes like absurd. You know what I mean? Like they're eating babies in the basement of this pizza restaurant. And like, which doesn't have a basement. We just side note here. We're going to play some show, or we're going to do some shows on the East Coast right before COVID, or right when COVID started. And I had tried to get us a show at Comet Ping Pong because they do it. They do shows there. Usually punk shows. But they said no. Like, you know, they eat babies, and then like, you know, Pizzagate morphs into QAnon, and it's like everybody in the world's a fucking pedophile, literally, except for Donald Trump. He just, you know, Chapo calls him a white hat pedophile when they talk about this, which I think is basically the QAnon description of him, that he just hung out with these pedophiles just so he could catch them. But I think Stone came up with it and laundered it, or at least took advantage of this and laundered it through Mike Cernovich and Jack Posobiec, who became, you know, who
the Sobieks like a military intelligence guy, as far as I understand it.
So naval reserve. Okay. Let's not give him too much credit. He's naval reserve intelligence. The Sobiek is a scumbag. He is literally way more people like he's actually a Nazi. Like I think he's a fucking pretty dumb one. I don't think he's as like devious and by devious I mean smart as like some of these other guys. But like Posobiec is like a Nazi. He's just too pussy to say it because he's trying to get like a mainstream career now, which I think that'll end. But I think that he was a big Pizzagate guy. People forget that. He went to fucking Comet Ping Pong. He live streamed from there. He was like took pictures. He was literally live streaming. There was like I watched it like a couple months ago. There was like a group of just like 20-year-old women who were just walking on the street in DC. He's like, look at these fucking hipsters. I think they're going to the Comet Ping Pong. Like, oh my God. Like trying to get videos of their face. It's like, dude, you were literally just videotaping women on the street. But he laundered it through those guys. So it becomes like a sort of, you know, not mainstream, but it became like a big talking point because it makes the whole idea of like a pedophile ring among the ruling class into this absurd thing. It's like, well, you don't believe that. That's Pizzagate stuff, isn't it? Which, you know, it's...
You know, I was going to add something to that. I don't know what you think of this. Listen, I've been to, like, conspiracy conventions, and I'm embarrassed to admit that because that's nerdy as fuck.
That's all right.
My fucking dad would take me to these things because he was into, like, conspiracies and fucking...
Sick.
All that weird shit. But, you know... They used to sell these books like fucking the one I remember was this book called Transformation of America. Have you heard of that one?
I don't think I have.
So it's some crazy book about like Project Monarch, which is like this fake MK Ultra thing that we can't prove existed about mind controlled sex slaves of the CIA. And I remember people at these conferences, they would not show them on display the books, but you would have to ask for them.
Yeah, I'm like, under the table.
Is this shit like porno for you fucking evangelical types?
Yes.
Is this shit? You know, that's how I feel about Pizzagate. I'm like, this comes from 4chan. They're into that lolly shit or whatever the fuck it's
exactly.
called.
Exactly. Literally. No, it comes from 8chan, which is like 4chan, except just with more child porn and Nazi mass shootings. Like, the crazy thing is this QAnon fucking, when it originally, I mean, now it's on 8kun, which is like, there's some really good QAnon Anonymous that, podcast episodes about sort of how 8kun came to be and the derangement of the founder of it. But it's literally a website. Like 8chan, I think, hosted probably more child porn than any other website in the world. And so you have these like 65-year-old, like, you know, Las Vegas suburbs grandparents, you know, on there for 15 hours a day calling each other autists and Anon or whatever. While like thousands of child porn videos are being shown on the same site. And like, it's scary though, because QAnon has sort of taken on the dimensions of a religion, right? Or of a cult, at least. Like, it has its prophets, it has its adherents, it has like, you know, it's basically impossible to talk to a QAnon person in the same way that it's impossible to talk to somebody who's like really, you know, neck deep in cult stuff. Because it's the same sort of like, one thing that's really amazing about QAnon is every new development, every month that goes by where Hillary Clinton, who's secretly under house arrest, has not been sent to Guantanamo Bay and executed, it becomes, I mean, it's obviously absurd on the face of it. It's almost absurd to even like try to argue about it logically, but it's like they have taken every development and just molded it into the canon. Like it absorbs everything, every setback for Trump, every non-prosecution, you know, they just believe totally false statistics like, you know, that Trump is prosecuting 4,000% more pedophiles than ever before. And like, it breeds this really, you know, like people say we do like a conspiracy podcast, but I try not to get into like too paranoid of thinking where like everything's connected and I'm being gang stalked or whatever, because that's not how it works. Even if it's well, worse.
I mean, for me, I get why people would say it's a conspiracy podcast, right? But
yeah, for sure.
To me, TrueAnon is sort of dealing with the fact that there is this rot within the elite where, you know, they can basically do whatever they want with impunity, and no one does anything. You know,
yeah,
that to
like,
me is the real message.
And it's also like I am obsessed with sort of like the post-war like anti-communist like deep international deep state or whatever.
Vincent Bevan's The Jakarta Method.
Exactly, fucking fantastic book. But like all that, like I really like that Visa blog. You know, it's a lot of that shit I really enjoy. But I think a lot of shit came out of that too. Like, I mean, everything that came before today shaped today. But like, I think that really directly shaped a lot of the political scene, even or directly and indirectly. But like, yeah, the right wing shit is so. I don't know. It's strange. Also, it's pretty anti-Semitic in a lot of cases. Like QAnon is very clearly talking about Jews in a lot of his posts. Which, you know, it's like David Icke.
Yeah. The
it's
reptiles.
Like, he's saying reptiles. It's like Q saying like them or whatever, but it's like,
you know, it's funny you mentioned David Icke because, I remember I had one of his books when I was younger and yeah. I looked in the back of it and he has all these different anti-Semitic authors like Eustace Mullins, Secrets of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
And it's in the bibliography. And then I'm looking at it. Wait, is that David Duke in the bibliography, My Awakening? I'm like, wait, oh, maybe he really is talking about Jews instead of lizard people.
Yeah, I think actually legit a lot of people may not know that because the lizard people thing is kind of like, I think it's just like when I was younger, a lot of people were like, yeah, lizard people, like it's a joke. But then like, I don't know. It's, yeah, that shit's, that's like, it's like a lot of that stuff just does more harm than good because it's like, well, There are bad things that are happening, but like pretending that there's something else that they are, like it obfuscates what's actually happening. You'll never hear me claim that like Epstein is like the fucking one key where it's like he was without him, this apparatus falls apart or whatever. Like, or that like it's a Jewish thing or anything like that. Like it is what it is.
I was going to mention, you know, I've heard people, you know, try to trash TruAnon, I guess.
Oh,
saying,
yeah.
Oh, Nazi podcast or this and that. And, you know, I've never got the impression that you guys were like out to hurt anyone's feelings.
No, I am obviously extremely Jewish myself and love being Jewish. My whole thing is that I am a Jewish person who's not, who like a lot of people sort of my generation are pretty out of step with like mainstream Jewish life in America, which is, you know, often votes Democratic, but is, you know, which is not my thing either, but like, you know, extremely conservative in many ways, but also like really pro-Israel. And I think of Israel as like an apartheid country. And like the way I think of it is like a really good sort of heuristic. I don't know if this is the correct word, use of heuristic.
Are you a fan of Norman Finkelstein at all?
The sworn enemy to Alan Dershowitz.
That's why I mentioned him. He's been posting on his blog every day all the Dershowitz tweets and then commenting on them.
I gotta check that out.
Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt. You were saying,
but yeah, like it's like you know, Finkelstein, you know, that position that he has used to not be a very popular one. Now it's much more popular with many people, with many young Jewish people like me and people I know. And like the thing is the way I view it is Israel is basically objectively an apartheid state. And so whenever someone mentions Israel to me, I just replace it in my head with apartheid era South Africa. And that makes any opinion I have it really on it really easy. I don't think, and people have accused us of this, and it's I think basically just unfounded. I don't think that like Israel's behind every thing in the world, right? Like I think Israel, you know, obviously has their hand in many things, just like America has their hand in many things, just like, you know, Germany, every country has their hand in many things. Not as many as America usually, but like I think there's a tendency for people to think of like Israel as like the sort of final boss. And I don't think Israel should exist. I think it should be a one state solution guy, with full rights to Palestinians, but and reparations. But like I there is this like sort of tendency that when people will mask it among conspiracy people or whatever to just blame Israel for everything, or like say that Israel is corrupting America, when it's like, that's, it's, if you think that that Israel can corrupt America, when like, and the implication that America isn't already corrupt, hasn't been fucking since its inception, then we are talking a fucking different language. That's the thing. I'm not a nationalist, right? Like, I want to overthrow the government. I don't want the government to just be not like controlled by bad forces or whatever. The government's controlled by bad forces, whether fucking Epstein exists or not. And so like, I think I come at it from like a different angle. I, like you do too. Like there's, but like people who I sort of view as having my line of thinking on this stuff, it's like in terms of conspiracies or like conspiracy stuff or whatever, like there's a lot more right-wing people, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. I always tell people, I think conspiracies happen. Like I think a lot of things can be traced back to stuff like Iran-Contra, right?
For sure.
You know, like it's the same names over and over and over again. But I'm like, I don't think there's a grand conspiracy stretching back to like ancient times. You know, I don't think it's the Illuminati behind everything.
No, the only thing that connects people is these symbols, and the symbols that we use and the symbols that are used by these groups or used by people who oppose these groups, whatever. It's like, it's that sometime by the Jungian thing. It's like these symbols are just like in our subconscious, you know, it's not a conscious thing. And I certainly don't think it's some fucking Assassin's Creed bullshit where it's like, the forces of good and evil have been fighting for thousands of years. Definitely not.
You know, two more things I wanted to ask you real quick, if I could, was...
For sure.
You know, I'm doing a show, upcoming show, on these things called the WASP schools. Are you familiar with that at all or no?
It's... Hold on. Let me look at this real quick. Yes! Oh, yes! Yes, dude! I went to one! Not one of these, but...
That's why I brought it up, because I'm like, I read on your wiki
that
you went to a boot camp, and I'm like, I wonder if he knows about these behavior modification
schemes. Dude, wait, you're talking to somebody who's like from the...
I'm talking to a documentarian who did a documentary on it, and then I'm going to talk to someone that was a survivor of the school.
Awesome. These ones, I believe, were worse than the one I got sent to, because these ones are... really fucked. I get so mad looking at these things. So what happened to me is when I was 12 or 13 years old, I was hanging out with some fucking other hoodlums, and one of them had some fireworks, so it must have been right around this time of year, and someone threw it into a field or like a hill with a bunch of dry grass, burned all the shit on the hill, almost burned down these apartments, but it didn't. I stuck around because I was like, oh my god, dude, like people live in there, like I gotta call the fucking fire department. And I got in trouble for that and for graffiti. I basically took the fall for everything. And I was on probation. My probation officer was, in retrospect, I think pretty corrupt. Definitely a piece of shit. He encouraged my parents to send me to a behavior modification school. My parents took out a fucking loan. And they didn't tell me any of this stuff. I got woken up in the middle of the night by two large men who were like, you're coming with me. And I was like, that's... sounds awful. Why, who are you, kidnapping me? It was very unclear what was going on at first. They take me to really crazy journey to the middle of the Oregon Dalles, the desert there, where I am strip searched, blindfolded, driven 2 hours, dropped off in the snow, made to basically live in the snow for a couple of months. I think it was either 1 month to 3 months. I literally can't remember. I think it was 2 months, I think. But it blurred together. I thought I was going home. And that place was called Sagewalk. It later got shut down after the deaths of two kids, one by strangulation. I thought I was going home, but instead I got sent to a place called Monarch, which...
Ooh.
Project Monarch. Called Monarch in Montana, which my parents thought was just like a regular boarding school, but for troubled teens. No, no, no. It used to be something called Synanon.
You know what? That's why I mentioned the WASP stuff, too, because... this documentary, and he's telling me, it all traces back to this heroin addiction program called Synanon that came out of AA, but really it was just a crazed abusive cult. But go on, I'm sorry.
Exactly. No, exactly. And it's, you got to check it out. We're actually doing like a little cult thing. Like I'll tell you about it after, but we're doing some Synanon stuff. But yeah, it came out of this program called Synanon, which I don't know like a ton about. I do know my dad used to be like a like alt journalist in the 60s, and his friend covered it and got a snake in his mailbox from Synanon. But Synanon was like, yeah, crazy abusive cult. They used to take people off the streets of LA, inject them with potassium to cure them of heroin addiction, which does not work, and I think did kill people. They got shut down, or like it dissipated slash got shut down. They started, some people who were like big wigs in it started this school or this program called CEDU, C-E-D-U. That place got in some trouble too. And then the son of like the owner of it changed his name, moved to Montana and started Monarch, just a singular project, which basically we had the same exact program as CEDU, which means the same program as Synanon. Attack therapy, really crazy, like 3-day sessions where they put you in a room with all mirrors and play the talking heads really loud over and over and over and over while you pretended to be a baby and didn't feed you. I was the first escapee. After a year, I had convinced them that I was fixed. I mean, I was supposed to be there for like a couple years at least, but I was convinced them I was fixed enough to go on a home visit where I would get rid of... Their whole thing was destroying your image. And my image was I was a 13-year-old punk who like loved the fucking Dead Kennedys and the Damned and shit. And they're like, you got to get rid of your like 7 CDs and like your little leather jacket, which I was so proud to have had. I had all these things at home. I didn't have them at the school. And so they sent me home for a few days. And knowing that if I used the phone, my parents could look at the phone records and see who I called. I hit up my friends on Instant Messenger in the middle of the night. I woke up and used my dad's computer and they came and picked me up. And I was on the run for about 4 months. During this time, my parents finally looked into the school and were like, oh, this seems like a cult. My dad was like, oh, Synanon? That's not good. It was fucking psycho adventure. I went down to LA at one point with $0, got dropped off on Hollywood Boulevard at 3 a.m. Guy tried to molest me. I fucking slept in dog shit. It was wild. But eventually I got arrested while making out with a ball or shaved headed little skinhead girl under a bridge in a park in San Francisco at like 2. And I got in trouble for truancy. I gave him a fake name, didn't come up because I didn't really know how to give fake names back then. I got arrested and detained actually. And they figured out who I was. And by that time, my dad had found out that this school was what it is. And I didn't have to go back. But yeah, fucking insane. Man, these places are really crazy.
But the reason I brought it up is because, like, I mean, a lot of this stuff connects. I mean, we're talking about abuse. And, like, yeah. People don't realize, like, those WASP schools and all that shit, the CEDU programs, I mean, that's designed for, like, fucking parents with a lot of fucking money to send their kids to that.
Yep.
I mean, it's another abuse thing. I mean, well, I'm not saying it's the same as the Jeffrey Epstein elite
but some of these places are. The fucking cook at my place who worked with us, because we had to do all, it was a work farm. So it was like a fully functioning farm and we had to do all that shit. The chef at my place, or the chef, the guy who like taught us how to cook and like we had to make the meals with him, he got arrested for child pornography right after I left. So the really nefarious thing is they do too. I mentioned my parents, I took out a loan. The places that connect you with these schools will also connect you. They will convince you that your child is going to die and then connect you to a loan officer. The implication being like, you got to take out this money or your kid is going to die. And that was the craziest thing. This mantra is they literally had us repeat it. If I wasn't here, I would be dead. And I'm like, I have smoked fucking salvia out of an apple one time and kissed a girl, but I didn't know what making out was yet. So I kissed her closed mouth and then she wouldn't kiss me again because she was like, this guy doesn't know how to make out. That is the extent of my delinquency. And that was like, I mean, some kids there have like fucking smoke rock and stuff, which I later became a junkie. I think probably because this shit fucked me up so bad, but I'm fine now.
Parallel lives a little bit because I mean, I didn't go to like a CEDU program, but I was in residential home for a while because I was like a very angry, pissed off fucking kid. Yeah. And it's funny because that place now got shut down for fucking sexual abuse. It's like
crazy how that happens. Because they're almost totally unregulated. I mean, that's people think that they're like in Montana and Utah because they're far away from where most people live. No, no, no. They're in Montana and Utah because they give a lot of money to fucking politicians there to leave them the fuck alone. You know, I never saw any inspectors or anyone in a year that I was there, which, you know, you'd think that they would have. But my whole area there was surrounded by similar schools. I mean, literally, I think there was like 20 in like a 50-mile radius.
So before I let you go, because we've gone, like hour and a half now. And I know I said I was only going to go an hour, but I appreciate your going over. Because
no, I'm a fan of the show. Honored to come
on. This conversation has been a long time coming. And I'm going to have to send you the Nathan Forrest Winters interview, the guy that with the director of Jeepers Creepers. But I was going to ask you about where do you think things go from here with Ghislaine Maxwell? You think she's going to end up dead? What's going on?
You know what? I don't think she's going to end up dead. I think that would be a little, I mean, if she does, please do not clip that and replay it, people. this is just a guess. But I think that if they do neutralize her, it won't be through killing her. I think it will be through some medical thing where she's like, you know how like Harvey Weinstein started his trial upright and ended it literally in the hospital?
Right, right.
I think it'll be like that, whether she does it or whether someone else does it. I think that she'll basically...
The thing is, if she gets flipped and turned into like an asset in you know, narking on people, I'm like, she's only going to, you know, rat on the people that she thinks will, you know, benefit her.
For sure. Yeah. She's going to rat on whoever it pays to rat on. Right. Like, I think Prince Andrew at this point has been cut. Basically, like he's disposable now. Although I don't think people keep talking about arresting him. It's like, I think it's kind of unprecedented for the US government to arrest a member of the British royal family. I don't think people have really thought out about the implications of that because he is technically related to the actual head of state there. It's not like, I mean, she doesn't have a lot of power. I mean, she does have a lot of power, but it's, you know, she's not making the day-to-day decisions, but like in a formal sense, the queen is the head of state. And so like, that would be a big deal. But yeah, I think that like there's a lot of diverging paths from where we are right now. If she does flip, I think a certain amount of things can happen. She flips in one way, flips in the other way. I'm just like really, I was shocked to find that she was in New Hampshire. And I think, you know, the assistant director of the FBI who spoke at the press conference said that they knew where she was the entire time, which means they've been monitoring her this whole time, which I mean, I'm sure she probably knows as well. But like, I don't know. I'm as curious as anybody else. I truly don't know, but I'm very curious. Like,
you know, I was going to say the other thing about this whole Epstein case is like, I think sometimes people get bogged down in like, oh, he was on the island, you know, with the sex slaves doing it with them and all this shit. And I'm like, it doesn't really matter to me. Well, I mean, it matters, but, you know, at the very least, when you read about Virginia Jeffrey, and what she has to say about Clinton, she's like, well, he knew what was going on. My picture was on Epstein's desk. I mean, at the very least, like,
dude, his Florida house was literally covered in pictures of young children on the walls.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't know if Elon Musk was, you know, having relations with any of these people, but I think everyone in this circle knew who Epstein was and they looked the other way.
For sure. That's the thing. People get, I agree with that exactly. People get too, like, I don't think that Elon Musk, you know, was a child molester or whatever, but I do think that Elon Musk was like, I know who this is, and I don't care that he did what he did. I think I'll still go to his house. Fucking, I do think, though, did you read that shit about Elon Musk's brother dating a girl?
I did not. Fill me in on that.
So, Kimball Musk, Elon Musk's brother, who's also extremely annoying, but he does, like, hydroponic farming. Like, he's, like, a startup guy, but for that. he is rumored, there's a Business Insider article, which, you know, anonymous sources, but I do believe it is sourced, article about Kimball Musk dating a girl who was housed in the East 66th Street apartment building that Epstein and his brother owned, which housed also all the underage models. And, like, I don't think Kimball, there's no indication that Kimball Musk dated someone underage, but it is interesting that he did date someone from basically Epstein's stable for a couple of years. And that is, you know, that to me is much more damning, because that apartment building was, as Brunel's office was, everybody, like, that's just basically
high level of criminality in one spot.
Exactly. That's a nexus right there.
You know, the other thing before I forget was, you got any opinions on the whole, I guess the Jane Doe case that got thrown out? I know people said, oh, you know, that there was some Jerry Springer type person was involved.
It's, you know, with that one, I think Trump is guilty. I don't know, but I mean that in a general sense. I don't know about that case. You know, like, it's hard to say. Like, that woman did recant. That does not mean that it didn't happen at all.
Well, I didn't take it seriously until I found out. I guess the one attorney for it was, I think, Lisa Bloom, who's, like, really respected civil rights attorney. I'm like, I don't think she would have taken up the case if it was, like, complete bullshit, unless they really fucking fooled her.
She's a fucking scumbag. She was working both sides on the Weinstein case, but she is a real deal. You know, like, I don't think she would have taken the case unless they checked it out, and so I think that there was something there. I don't know what it is, but, like, I think it's, you know, entirely probable that Donald Trump is allegedly a rapist. You know, I don't think that even his fans would really be able to argue with that.
I think they would, like, they would, like, cheer him on for it.
They like it. That's the thing, is people keep trying to shame them, be like, she said to grab her by the pussy thing. It's like, everybody who cares about, like, the grab her by the pussy comments and shit like that already doesn't like him. And the people that do like him like those comments.
See, I remember when the whole Stormy Daniels stuff hit.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, this is going to bring Trump down. I'm like,
no, it's like,
have you talked to a Trump supporter?
He fucked a porn star. Exactly. People love it. It's, I mean, oh God, remember the lawyer from that? What's his fucking name? Michael whatever.
Avenatti. He's on Cameo now. He's on Cameo. And Roger Stone's on Cameo too. He's charging $75. God. I think I'm gonna get Roger Stone to do a shout out for my podcast.
I'll get Avenatti to do one.
Well, listen to this. Stormy Daniels is charging $250 on Cameo. Avenatti's $350.
$350?
He's apparently worth more than Stormy Daniels. Holy shit. So, I guess in closing, how can my listeners check out TruAnon? I mean, unless they've been living under a rock, I assume they've, you know, there's crossover. People have listened to it. And you know what? I want to clear the air. I wanted to mention Pierce Redmond, because I know Pierce has said in the past, he's like, he feels bad because I guess no one recognizes him. And I'm like, I think Brace is a fan of yours.
Yeah. Pierce's show fucking rules.
Porkin's That's
the
policy.
Thing. It's, the thing is, yeah, Porkin's policy. The problem is that our show blew up just because, I think because we went on Chapo and because I was already kind of well-known before. But, like, I always feel bad because there's people who are way better at doing this shit than I am, whose shit doesn't blow up as much. I mean, Whitney Webb gets a lot of attention, but like Pierce Redmond, for instance, or even like, I mean, a lot of people listen to Opperman Report, but like not necessarily a lot of younger people. And yeah, I don't know. I always tell people to check out other shows. Fucking Death Is Just Around the Corner. I like that one too. I don't know if you heard that one.
Mm-mm. I'll check that one out.
It's good. That guy. I think you would vibe on it too, because he's also a fellow rocker. But yeah, no, I don't fucking anybody. Listen, someone doesn't like my podcast, I can't blame them. It is a sin to like a podcast. And so by disliking a podcast, you were doing an anti-sin. So no, power to them. But yeah, no, I it's also, if someone doesn't like my podcast, they're not going to stop me listening to theirs.
So Pierce, if you're listening, make amends.
He doesn't even have to make amends. I just like his, but just don't stop making your podcast. Cause that shit, big fan.
And how can my listeners check out True and On if they've been living under a rock, as I said?
We are on the fucking podcast apps. What is it? I don't remember, even though it's the iTunes podcast app. We're on all the
Apple podcasts now. You can find it everywhere. It's fucking,
I don't know,
because
when we first started doing it, I was like, I don't know how to like get it on like Google Podcasts or whatever, but I think I eventually figured it out. I think there's like a couple it might not be on, but I don't know how those work. So if it's not on one, try another one. But it's on the big ones, I think.
Well, Brace, thanks again for coming on. Parallax, it's
Thank
been a
you.
Long time
you
coming.
You got to return the favor.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
Sick. All right.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brace Belden of the popular TrueAnon podcast. Many thanks to Brace for coming on the show. Hopefully I can return the favor and go on TrueAnon in the near future. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@protonmail.com. Oh, and of course, if you can, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/ParallaxViews. I could really use the listener support. It is my Patreon supporters that keep this show going. So many thanks to them, including one of the newest Patreons, Emilia, who is part of the $10 tier that gets a producer credit in each episode. So thank you, Emilia. Again, if you haven't yet, consider supporting me on patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. With no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.